Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Dricus Kombrink from Capicraft and Thamsa Nganeta from Shiloh Capital. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. You know, the market continue. You know, there's a bit of turmoil there. I mean, I'm told that the new apps, new applications at McDonald's are up 600% in the last 3 weeks, which should tell you what's going on, right? So, Thamsang, I'll start with you. Yesterday, because, you know, the markets in the U.S. just opened now, and they opened in the red, and yesterday they were down about 4.9%, but they managed to eke out some gains, you know, after 6 days of straight, you know, red days. So what's your feel of the market right now? Is it, do you think we are bottoming out, or are there opportunities there?
No, both, ironically. I think the opportunities still exist, especially with stocks that, you know, you can sort of forecast and understand their industry and forecast future cash flows. So it's a price versus value discussion. The bottoming out is a difficult one to ascertain, largely because the market is pricing in future interest rate hikes by the Fed. So they're wanting to adjust and reprice assets in order to align with future interest rate hikes.
Yes, and Dricus, the South African market didn't seem much to be correlated with the rest of the world. I mean, we had commodities on our side, oil increasing, you know, pushing up the likes of Sasol and obviously the other commodities companies, resources companies benefiting from that for about 2 weeks of 2022. And then we sort of, you know, now joined on the hip for the rest of, you know, the last week, for example, the JSE erased all of those gains. So where to here from the, for the JSE? Are we going to continue, you know, in that dip that we're seeing in global markets, or maybe we'll be spared again? Because I see the Rand is still trying to hold on to those gains.
I think to a degree, I think not just the JSE, but the emerging markets may be spared, if only relatively.
Relatively.
You know, relative to developed markets, and especially, you know, relative to the US. Most of the liquidity, most of the money that's been printed the last few years have found its way into the US and into certain sectors, growth sectors in the US. And I think that is still where most of the pain lies. And so I think if you're not in growth and you're not in the US, you know, relative to that, you might do well. So I don't know if that answers your question, Bright. Locally, I do think that the economy might look a bit better after Omicron has faded and the economy opens up a bit. We might have a bit of a better economy despite all the own goals from politicians, etc., and Eskom, you know, name your laundry list there. I think we're in for a slightly better economy locally. And I think the local stocks might not do too badly, especially relative to their multinational locally listed peers.
Yes, we'll start with this question, which we didn't answer last week. This is from Jonathan Govender. I see he sent an email again saying, hi, what's the panel's view on the hype around Orion Minerals? I know you follow this one, Thamsanqa.
No, I think it's around potential future production and the resources, and also the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, it's dual listed. I haven't recently looked at it, but the future production as well as the quality of the management team. So in essence, people are pricing in the potential future cash flows of mining the base assets they mine going forward. And I think as with all producers, the moment they can prove resource and they can prove capacity and capability to mine, then it becomes a matter of a discounted cash flow valuation. And if your DCF calculation inevitably is higher than the present market price you buy. So I think that's the basic underlying thesis for Orion.
Yes, and Dricus, we have a question from Ululama here on Twitter. She's asking, What does the recent Steinhoff settlement agreement mean for your everyday investor? And what does it mean for unit trust investor whose unit trusts were invested in Steinhoff before the calamity?
Well, it means you can sell it for a bit more than that you could sell it for a few weeks ago. You know, what the fair value is after you know, all is said and done, I don't know. There's still a lot of stuff that has to happen. There's still a lot of legal proceedings that has to happen. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it's worth, and it's still in my too hard to analyze or to will take too long, too much energy and too much time to analyze pile. It's in the dustbin right next to me.
Yeah, I mean, Tamsang, it sounds all well and great that, you know, there's a 25 billion rand windfall from somewhere, right? But I mean, the biggest shareholder at the time, if you look at the timelines, was Christo Wiese. So how much is going to be left for your everyday investors after that? I mean, we're talking about fighting for bones here.
Yeah, I think this is the typical outcome where they call paper profits, that it's not going to flow through to the average retail investor, even to some degree, the average institutional investor. I think what we must take for certain is that over time, as our firms get bigger and they broaden out internationally, these sort of balance sheet effects will start happening. Not necessarily that the impact of the dollars will be in country, or that the impact of the repricing will happen to the retail investor, but in terms of accounting, it will occur and the Reserve Bank will bank it. So I think it's important to recognize that as our economy continues to grow as an emerging market economy and our firms continue to go offshore, this sort of accounting will continue.
Wow, that's not comforting at all. Stock, what's your view on coal price for the short term? Do you feel that Thungela is a stock to buy at current levels? This is from Ian on the SMS line. Trickus?
Yeah, I think Thungela is still, it looks optically cheap at these coal price levels. I think Newcastle FOB prices reached $300, I think, yesterday. So if you punch that into Excel spreadsheet, you'll get a much higher fair value for Thungela and most other coal companies. The question is, of course, will it stay here? There's a lot of factors that are, you know, excuse me for stealing Jerome Powell's term, transitory. Maybe even a slightly lower gold price will still produce a higher price for Thungela, or for most other, you know, for the whole industry. The one thing that we just must keep in mind about Thungela is, although it looks like they will be generating a lot of free cash flow and they've got basically no debt at this stage, they will need to accumulate a lot of capital to reinvest in the business a few years down the line, as a lot of those mines that they have are fairly short reserve spans, lifespans.
So they're closer to their estimated useful life. Tlali is asking, is there hope for the renewable energy space and marijuana stocks? A lot was riding on policy changes. Doesn't seem like Biden is in a hurry to make any changes. Tamsang.
So with renewable energy, yes. I think especially with, for example, now Investec has started giving out loans for people to set up solar in their homes. So I think renewable energy companies and those who provide the equipment around that are gonna do well. For cannabis companies, I'm not sure. That needs scale, and not only scale, path to market. So you've got to get your products to markets in which they are consumed at scale. And so I think it's a difficult competitive landscape, and the regulations are also quite heavy-handed. So I think on the cannabis side, I'm not confident. On the renewable energy side, very confident. The scope is broad. You can start with anything that comes out the ground, gas, helium, and you can go all the way to what's in nature, which is in the air, wind, hydro, solar. And dare we say nuclear?
Nuclear is the way to go, man. What are you talking about? So we have a question on email. It says, quick question for the panel with regards to Zeda. Hold for the long term or sell? Regards Vavis. This is Yanga Vava.
I've previously, I think two times on the show, I've chosen Zeda as a stock pick.
Yes.
It's not doing too badly, and we received a special dividend last year again, after even after the Pioneer food unbundling the year before. I think it was 20 cents, and it's trading near all-time highs again, about 330. And I think the NAV at the moment, you know, you've got Carb Agri that's listed, and you've got a few other companies there. If you just take the last stated NAV statement from Zeda, then you arrive at about 4.50. If you use yesterday's price, yeah, 4.50 something. And then, so it's quite a discount, almost 30% discount to NAV. But what's going to make that NAV close? I think the management have stated, you know, more than once, and as the parent company PSG Group, that they want to simplify the group structures. And I think the probability that Zeda is going to continue to exist as an investment holding company in the medium term is very little, and it might disappear from the, you know, from the exchange, or just, you know, evolve into an operating company if they sell more assets.
Yeah, so you're saying there's corporate action there pending. Tamsang, are your views on Zeda?
I agree. I think to some extent we have to discuss that Pete Mouton and his team, since he's taken over, they've gone on an unbundling spree and moving off core assets, selling them off. And I think they will have to prove to the market what they can deliver, because what was built was his father with him, but mostly just Yanni. Now Pete has to deliver the same level of value or attempt to. Capitec is on its unbundling. Zeda is unbundling its assets. Pioneer was a major one. So going forward, Zeda will either have to do some very, very good acquisitions that add on and bolt on and show value to the firm, or they are going to have to dismantle it. And I think Pete and his team have been given a long runway. A lot of asset managers or investors of that nature are not given that kind of runway. But he and his team now have to prove that they have the ability as PSG Group to redo what they did historically.
We'll take a question here from Twitter, which is coming from Koke. So he's asking, is Netflix a buy after this big dip? Tamsana?
I would say it's a hold, not a buy. I think there's still scope for it to dip further. I think there's a large element of their earnings which were COVID related. So they have to sift through that and show where they're going to grow, how they're going to grow, and more importantly, how they're going to monetize all their production, which they've started doing and developing. So I think the business case exists. They now have to show the future cash flows. So I think for now, if you own the shareholding, if you don't, I think a little bit more patience and you might be able to get it at a lower level.
Oh, fantastic. Trickus, Yesh Pile is asking, hi all, would you bet on Karooooo or Mixed Telematics?
I think both are actually, well, they've done quite well, but I'll hold back and see where the tech sell-off takes us offshore. Maybe it spills over here and we get some of them on the cheap. Let's see.
And Tamsang, what's your view? Because the theory has been that, you know, most of these telematics users are actual, like, companies, you know, like miners, for example, that use these, especially on a massive scale. And that seems to be doing exceptionally well, and they're coming off the ground. Maybe there's an opportunity here to get in on one of them, especially the likes of Mix, more Mix than Karooooo.
Yeah, so I'm of the view that you don't always have to be an either or. I think if you have a portfolio approach to them and you balance yourself out between the two firms, I think there's an opportunity that exists for both. I think you can back both. The businesses have a sound business case, and the management seem to know what they're doing. So I think for me, a either or is not always the best approach. Sometimes a portfolio approach where you balance out your portfolio between the two is probably the best way to get industry level returns.
Okay, fantastic. Sounds like a cop-out answer, Tam Sanga there. Sebastian is asking, any reasons not to buy this dip? Russia, Ukraine, rate hike, non-transitory inflation, etc. Short-term correction or long-term downtrend? Drikus?
I think I've got a suspicion. Nothing is for certain in the markets ever, but I've got a suspicion we're already in an extended bear market. We'll see a nice bounce here, nice bear market rally. But the bear market would not be everywhere. Might be something similar to what we saw in 2000, 2001. Took about 2.5 years for the market to bottom. The market internals started selling off in only 6 months to a year after the, you know, more of the mid and small caps sold off, like we saw last year. You know, some of those growth names started falling by third quarter last year already. Yeah. Some of the bigger ones came down. That started happening now. And I don't think the Fed is going to back off just because we've got a slight correction on the S&P 500. Inflation is a real problem. It's not going to go away. It will moderate. It will moderate over the next few months or so. And that might lead to, you know, a rally here and there. But I'll use those rallies to rebalance my portfolio to areas where there's more value. And that will be emerging markets and, you know, classical old economy, left for dead companies all over the globe.
So you're of the view that it's a stock picker's market and you need to be...
Absolutely.
And there are pockets where you can actually still be long and sleep well at night. I like that. Tamsanga, this is from Tumike Kana on email. She's saying, hi. What is the outlook on RMB share price? Are there any prospects of growth in 2022? RMB must have been like RMH, RMB Holdings. I think it's RMH, yeah.
Look, I think since the unbundling, I don't see a way in which they grow or return value at a significant rate. They have some assets, Discovery, Outsurance. They have some assets momentum, but the scale of growth I don't think we will see again unless they begin to participate in the M&A space or even in the venture capital space. So I think if they start there, they might be. But for now, I think there are better places to put your capital.
Yeah, no, RMB is the one that used to hold the First Rand shares and a bit of properties, not the one that holds insurance companies. Trickus?
Yeah, I think Tammy was talking about RMI.
RMI, so, RMI is different story.
Yeah. So, yeah, RMH trading at about 161 for, according to company, the director's own reports.
Of NAV.
Is valued at about 2 rand 40, 2 rand 50, somewhere around there. A lot of that is in cash that's held as guarantees on some of those assets. Those won't be there forever. So there's a lot of cash. And they've stated in a way that the company won't, you know, continue to exist in its current form. So I think they're looking at some kind of way to return value back to shareholders and delist completely. But they're finding it difficult to do because they own a minority stake, you know, in some assets, and the majority shareholder actually made a takeover offer,
correct,
for those assets a while back, and it was at a heavily discounted price, a very cheeky price, if you will, of 155.
Stealing.
I think that presents. Stealing. Yeah, I think that would have been stealing, but I also think that presents a flaw for us. I don't think it's less. Worth less than 155, I think so. There's a lot of asymmetry here. I like these kind of trades. 150 around 160, I'll be a buyer, and if something happens, you've got a good 50, 60, 70, who knows, even if it's just 20, 30 cents upside, I'll take it.
Yes, Tamsang, this is from Twitter. Thinus Skuman is asking, says, hi, Woolies for the short term?
No. my view is no. I think they've got one great division, the food. The food division is doing well. The clothing and the bath they've taken in Australia, I'm not confident that that can be turned around simply by just write-downs and balance sheet corrections. I think they're going to have to prove over time they can manage the retail business well. The food business is fantastic. If one could buy into that, that I think would show some good margins and quality. They address a good market. And they are largely the premium brand in sort of the food retail market. And I think that's where the value is. Outside that, I think the rest of it has some healing to do, and the management have to get that done.
Yeah, I wonder if there are no activist investors listening to us here, because, I mean, if you're thinking it, I'm thinking a lot of investors are thinking it, there's potential for corporate action there. You've got one business that's doing exceptionally well and the other that's total trash. You know, you could separate the two and sell out the bits that no one wants, or unbundle the one, the bit that everyone wants. I don't know. Johan de Brain here says, please do Spa for me. Is it worth a nibble?
Spa?
Yes. The retailer.
Well, I think it's one of the best managed retailers, you know, listed on the JSE. They've done well. They've done well taking the business offshore, which, you know, a lot of others have failed to do. So kudos to them. They also manage inflationary pressure better because they don't own the overheads. It's because it's a franchise model. So when overheads rise, like electricity prices, you know, at the store level, all those fridges that need to be running day and night, and, you know, if rates and taxes go up, it's not their problem. It's a franchisee's problem. So they've been better able to handle the inflationary environment in SA, especially with concerns to those costs. And I think that's going to be issues going forward as well. And I think food inflation is going to be a big issue in the year ahead of us, in the next few years maybe, not just here globally. And somebody like Spa, which can just, you know, pass that on to consumers, should do well.
Okay, stock picks, Tamsang, for the evening?
Offerman, I missed this one late last year, but I think their business case is sound. And again, predictable resources play. If you understand the mineral, tin and other related minerals, you understand the management and the prospective future valuations of the mineral. I think they're trading below the market value, even after the current price uptick.
Okay, so it's Alphamin for you. So you're betting on mines in the Congo, which is pretty tough. Drikus, your pick for the evening?
Yeah, mine isn't that exotic. It's Tharisa Mining. So Tharisa has got chrome and... yes. Yeah, it's debatable then. So it's chrome and PGM, and yes, they actually expanding into other African countries at the moment. There's some diversification geographically and in their product mix. So they've got, for the next year or two, I think production increases will come through double digits. At the moment, they are returning a lot of cash to shareholders. I think they're paying about a 7 or 8% dividend yield on the current price.
Wow.
So a lot of value is being returned to shareholders. Sub 5 price earnings, that's before, you know, the production increases that we expected. Some of, you know, a lot of those production increases are due to CapEx that's already been spent. I think I sleep better at night being in a miner that's not as exposed to iron ore. Obviously, you know, chrome is used in stainless steel manufacturing, etc.
Ferrochrome,
but you don't need, you know, that's less exposed to, you know, China construction sector going up. So I'm better there than in the big diversified miners.
Okay, fantastic. So it's never very common that we get two mining stocks, you know, in the same evening. So there you have it. It's Alpha Min and Teresa. Thanks to my guest, Dricus Combrink from Capicraft and Tamsanga Netta from Shiloh Capital. Julieta takes more of your stock-related questions tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.